City Video, this is Russ.
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
Hello and welcome to Emerald City Video's new release wall.
And in the darkness yet again.
Yes, this is the dark world. No, wait.
I know, that's something else.
That's the different. We just went to see Thor Ragnarok, and now we're going to tell you all about it here in the dark.
Yep. You want to go to Wegmans?
Yeah, it's a good idea.
Let's go to Wegmans.
I'm Russ Burlingame, and this is...
Zach Roberts. And I guess we just gave a free advertisement to Wegmans.
Indeed.
So you should sponsor our podcast, Wegmans.
This is true. I should pursue that.
That doesn't really help too much, so I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, it's fine. Once we get to Wegmans, we'll have light in the parking lot, and in the meantime, it's ambiance, it's mood. But, okay, so, first of all, Zach, thoughts on Thor Ragnarok?
It's good. I mean, it was one of the most marvelous films of all the Marvel films.
Yeah.
In so much as, like, we added a little bit of dark edge to it, but, it's all fun and games and,
yeah.
Hey, guys, comic books, you know, like the most non-serious type of comic books, and there's a lot of witty humor and there's a fox. Anyway.
That is really no way to talk about Tessa Thompson. But I think that on first viewing, it's one of my favorites of the Marvel movies. You know, I right now I'm in a headspace. It's kind of a post-Guardians thing where I tend to really enjoy superhero stuff that doesn't... it has to be one of two things. If it's going to be Batman, Superman, then it can take itself seriously because the shot selection and the themes and the blah, blah, blah all support it.
Yeah.
But, like, Marvel, their stuff is such popcorn kind of fluff.
Yeah.
And that's not inherently a bad thing, but I do think that the Marvel movies that take themselves less seriously are more enjoyable to me because the way that the films are constructed is not meant to be deep and profound and meaningful.
Yeah, no. I mean, this film, by far, like, you could have told me that it was directed by James Gunn, and I would have been like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. But just, like, the world feel, the music, the kind of, you know, just kind of general atmosphere, especially, like, the title cards and stuff like that. Like,
I will say, Waititi, I think is how to say his name, Waititi does not, I don't think, do as good a job incorporating his style and his voice into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I think you can see, like, there's most of this film, it's very self-consciously a movie in a way that the Guardians films aren't.
Yeah.
Like, to me, it all felt a little bit more plastic. Like, one of the things that I thought really works for Guardians is that it has that used universe feel of Star Wars.
Yeah.
Where the sets, like, yes, they have these giant, epic, amazing sets.
Yeah.
But they don't all feel like they were built yesterday.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Whereas pretty much everything in everything in Ragnarok kind of feels like a set.
Yeah, and everything had... I mean, I'll say in this... and here is, I guess, where we drifted to criticize, which is what always happens with these things. Like, I feel really good. I like this film. And then we spend 45 minutes just criticizing.
Right.
No, but, I mean, like, the CG was certainly weird. Like, that, spoiler? No, I don't know if it's spoiler. The wolf thing?
Yeah, that's not really spoilers. It's a major part of Norse mythology,
fact that it actually appears, but like, that was, it seemed kind of weird, like, it didn't, like, when it was rusting on things, it seemed, I don't know,
I have a kind of a weird theory, and I don't think that it's actually right, but if it was, I would love it, which is, it almost feels like this film was constructed in such a way to specifically address things that Marvel has not done well in the past. Like, obviously, Marvel has struggled to make their Thor movies connect with an audience. I actually really liked the first one, but I know that it was one of the poorest received Marvel films.
I never really had a problem with them. I mean, like, they seemed, though, like they were very much kind of in a different universe.
Yeah.
Like down to, like, if you told me that they were actually a Fox production or something like that, like, down to, like, that level, just in the... since they were so based in, I mean, outside of like Quick Johnson to, you know, Homeland, it was so based in like very much real world. And I don't know if that was just because, you know, it was like, oh, we're going to use Natalie Portman as much as humanly possible or something. I don't know. Until they decide, I guess she decided that she was going to do films that nobody watched. Think of a film that she's done in the last, since Thor, basically.
She's got that thing. She's done a bunch of Miles Teller, I guess.
Yeah, a whole bunch of direct to TV sort of Netflix sort of things, which is super weird. But yeah.
Yeah, we do get and I won't spoil it exactly, not that there's much to spoil, but we do get a brief explanation of where Jane is in this movie.
Yeah.
And if anybody cares anymore.
Yeah, not really.
I mean,
it's also not really that much of an explanation.
No, it's really, it's just
oh, well, that was a thing that probably,
Yeah.
If you decide to go disappear into a off planet or whatever happened beforehand.
So what I was talking about. In addition to just the Thorness of it all, there's the fact that you have Hulk fighting a giant dog.
Yep.
Which, if you recall, was a thing that people got really angry about in, I think, the Louis Leterrier, the Incredible Hulk movie, that he fought the Hulk dogs.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah. And leaving aside the pop music soundtrack, this movie had a very interesting and the score, which is something, I mean, there's that video that went viral, the Marvel Symphonic Universe, talking about how Marvel doesn't have any memorable music.
Yeah.
And I thought Mark Mothersbaugh not only did a really good job with the score in this, it had this kind of sweeping, it felt very much like an 80s, like, action, like, it felt like it lacked the regality of Star Wars, but it felt very much like Star Wars in terms of the way that the music was used and the way that it swooped up at the right time and things like that.
Yeah,
I thought that it was done very well, and I thought that the incorporation of the themes from Thor the Dark World and from the Avengers really helped cement it in the Marvel Universe, even though outside of a few kind of things here and there.
Yeah.
It wasn't.
It's interesting, though, because it's still, and again, I recognize every frame of painting is what we're referencing, a YouTube video.
Theirs?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, cool.
I mean, somebody else might have addressed as well, but yeah, specifically how you stated the title was the one. One of the big things that they, he addresses in the film is that, like, obviously, you know, they haven't, obviously Batman has its built-in things, you know, so many other characters, but Wonder Woman now has her, like, you can hear it in your head.
Yeah, Junkie XL.
And, but this film, other than the, oh God, I forget what the song is that, and they...
The Led Zeppelin, Immigrant Song.
Yeah, Immigrant Song. Other than that, I have nothing else in my head.
You know what's really interesting about
it? Like, I don't remember any of the lyric, and even though it was done by, you know, it's you said Devo, right?
Yeah,
one of the guys from Devo.
I don't really remember, although I do remember at the time thinking, like, oh, this is really catchy compared to previous Marvel outings.
Yeah, I mean, so previous Marvels
if you watch the movie a second time, maybe you'll be able to, you know.
Yeah.
But I do think the prevalence of Immigrant Song kind of overshadowed a lot of the score. Fun kind of cool fact about this, and I wrote an article about it at the time, but it's worth mentioning on the podcast. Something like 8 years ago... a bunch of comic book creators on Twitter were going back and forth, and it was like they were doing, like, what would be the theme song, essentially, for a superhero?
Yeah.
And, like, you know, you're trading pop songs that you think suit. Greg Pak, who's a comic book writer I like a lot, chose Immigrant Song for Thor. What's really interesting about that is Greg's most notable contribution to the Marvel mythology is this story called Planet Hulk, which is basically a third of this movie.
Yeah.
So, weirdly, on Twitter, the guy who wrote Planet Hulk chose this as Thor's theme song?
Yeah.
I have no idea whether that was an intentional, like, if somehow Waititi heard about it, or I can't imagine that's the case. But
it's even cooler. It kind of has to be. I mean,
it's just one of those weird things where I'm like, if if it isn't the case, it's
unbelievably
even cooler. But
I mean, it works. I mean, it's a really it's you know, it's just like Iron Man from I don't know, is that actually the name of the song?
Yeah,
I am. You know, it's as kind of iconic when you listen to it as that. So I mean, it works. And I mean, unfortunately, I don't know if the how would you because I mean, this is almost I feel like this is almost Thor's it has a feel of like Thor's first film, like it has a feel of the first Iron Man.
Yeah,
like, that is almost the direct thing in the fact that he actually develops the character as opposed to the first one. Like, he's just, he just gets thrown on land and then is fought, thrown to, you know,
I mean, he I don't know, the first one.
Like, I liked the first one a lot, but it felt, I don't know, it just didn't feel like,
this, whether or not they did a really good job of fulfilling the arc in the first one, I will say that he had an arc designed into the narrative, which was essentially that he had to grow into the throne.
Yeah.
And they did that again in this movie. They kind of fulfilled
but,
that journey.
But I feel like he did that in this one.
Yeah.
The first one, clearly he didn't, because he still has been fighting that. So it's interesting. And the second one was very much, was kind of like, it had a feeling of a, we need to make another Thor film to keep this thing going. It didn't really further that much.
No.
I don't remember that much from it, other than one of the fight sequences that happens at a London school.
Yeah.
And that's literally, or a college.
I remember the like, there was a thing where there was like lightning coming down from the sky and there were these big, I don't know if it was like container cars or if it was spaceships, but there were these big blocky things. And I just remember thinking that they reminded me of the, oh my goodness, the Vogon ships at the beginning of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, yeah. Well, the first one stole from the monster, the creature, the whatever the thing was directly from. Oh my God, what's the? Fuck. I feel like it wasn't an MST3K film, but an iconic creature from.
It had a lot of the day the Earth stood still.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
Which is probably to the movie's credit. Is probably was stolen by Jack Kirby, because the destroyer in the movies looked pretty much exactly like the comics. I mean, there was, by the way, a ton of Jack Kirby in this movie, in the sense that, like, you look at those costume designs and so much of, like, everything in this movie looked like Kirby. Like, that was really nice to see, especially, you know, he just turned 100. It took them, like, until Avengers 2 before they finally started recognizing his contributions to the films. And so, this, and then when you look at the iconography of Wakanda in the Black Panther trailer that ran before this, it looks like Marvel is really going wholeheartedly into Jack Kirby right now, which is cool. But yeah, I thought that the villain was good. Like, I actually, like, it's interesting to me because this movie, and again, like, I didn't hate Thor 2. I know a lot of people really didn't like it. I don't remember almost any of it, but this movie feels very much like, hey guys, Thor 2 didn't happen, and let's use the same themes and the same, like, the you know, the ideas from the first one to make another sequel that's good.
Yeah.
Like, they really, like, it continues the narrative thread of Odin's dishonesty with his family. It continues the narrative thread of Thor needing to grow into the role of the ruler of Asgard.
Yeah.
You know, there was a nice touch that, because a lot of people have actually asked about this, like, it's a nerd thing. Way back in the first Thor, I think they didn't maybe know yet that Thanos was going to be the big bad for the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe, so they had the Infinity Gauntlet in the in the vault. and that was a nice touch. I'm super interested to see, I mean, I assume Loki has to have stolen the cosmic cube / the Tesseract, because that was in the vault when Loki was in the vault, and then there's an event later that you pretty much like, okay, well, if Loki didn't steal it, then, like, where the hell did it go?
Yeah.
And I don't think they're going to have time in the next Avengers movie to explore where it could have gone.
Yeah.
Certainly I'm interested to find out. There's a post-credits sequence that sets up something, and I don't know if that's setting up there was a scene in the footage from Infinity War where Thor is riding in a spaceship with the Guardians of the Galaxy. And I don't know if that's what that was setting up or if it was setting up something more menacing.
Yeah.
But they encounter something in the post-credits scene, and it's very much like, huh, that's sure a thing.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to go non-spoilers on this because I want to put it up tonight.
I'm trying to draw through things that, obviously, it still bothers me whenever they do these films that don't have the whole... Now that the Avengers have formed.
Yeah.
And they don't have all the Avengers and somehow can't call them. This one is less... It gets like, away with that the most by far. I mean, you've had a couple films where you're like, no, literally, they just didn't bother calling them because... because, as I always believe, Deadpool did it best with the, oh... Where's everybody else? You know, you can only afford. Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's actually. Yeah. I just recently guest hosted on the hashtag TV Geek podcast, and Michelle, who's one of the hosts over there, had said something about one of the Arrowverse shows, and said like, "Well, none of this really makes sense if you consider the fact that you could just call the Flash and just be done with this."
Yeah.
And I had responded by saying like, "Well, that's much." It's much more evident in the Marvel movies because they take such great pains to put... Like, everybody's in New York City.
Yeah.
Like, at any given time, you should be able to just call the Hulk.
Yeah.
And, I mean, not literally because at the time the Hulk is in space. And,
yeah.
You know, that's where we get this movie.
Yeah.
I will say, I mean, as far as, like, calling in the other people... I mean, maybe Iron Man could have helped with this, but, like, what the fuck is Captain America going to do against the Goddess of Death? I bet Hawkeye would have won the day, but you know. But yeah, this is a really interesting film. I mean, it's funny because there were a lot of things kind of dropped into this movie that I would have liked to see explored a little bit more, and I think that they needed to get to Ragnarok, because that was the thematic heart of the movie, and so you had this kind of issue of. Hey, here's all this stuff we want to make sure we acknowledge because now we're in the middle of blowing up Asgard. Yeah. And, like, there are certain things that no matter how... Like, once you get into that first scene where Hela returns, the nature of her return and the events that precipitate her return mean there are things that that would have been nice to explore that we now cannot explore, period.
Yeah.
And so, I think there were some things that got dropped in just as little bits of, and certain things too. Like I liked the fact that they talked a lot about like Thor and Loki's childhood and their relationship. And you got all those things that were like taken out of, little asides, but they were all from like Norse myth.
Yeah.
Except for one, which was the time Loki turned him into a frog.
Yeah.
Which is a reference. I don't know if you know this. There was a point in time where. There was a frog who was found worthy to wield Mjolnir, and there's this very famous cover by Walter Simonson, the guy who created Beta Ray Bill, which is that weird horse-looking alien who was Thor for a while.
Yeah.
And there's a shot of the frog Thor, and the image is so ridiculous that it's become, of course, a cult sensation. And Sideshow Collectibles, who do these like crazy high-quality, like $300 statues, have a frog Thor statue, which I so badly. I will say it's to scale. So it's only like $70 instead of $300.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So you know.
I mean, for some reason when you said to scale, I was like, so there's literally a frog and then sword. For some reason, I did the opposite of what you were thinking. Like,
for whatever
I just
reason,
immediately imagined.
For whatever reason, when he wielded the hammer became frog sized.
Oh,
but
well,
so
I mean, it seems more practical.
But so the statue is basically the size of a frog.
Yeah.
And so it's not like the 12-inch Thor statue. That would be the corollary. It's like, no, it's not.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was a nice little thing. I actually think that weird, like, the Tower of Champions that had all the gladiator faces on it, and, like, there was, like, a Hulk that seemed to be under construction on it. I think, like, on the left, there was a guy at the bottom, and then there was this weird alien-looking thing on the side. Mm-hmm. The CG was dodgy on that building every single time, but I think that the alien thing was actually supposed to be Beta Ray Bill,
nice.
which in the animated Planet Hulk movie, for whatever reason, instead of it being Thor who fought Hulk, it was Beta Ray Bill. And so it was one of those weird, like, oh, Beta Ray Bill's
every
in this
time, every time we, you discuss something about it, it seems like, how in the fuck are they getting away with the it's not a Hulk film sort of issue, which...
They literally buried, like, a 30-minute Hulk film in the middle of a two-hour Thor film in order to get away with it. And the fact that they are, like, that both the EP and Mark Ruffalo have talked in openly in interviews about how, like, this is the second part of a Hulk trilogy.
Yeah.
You're like, how are you getting away with this?
I feel like at some point they gotta have, there's, like, a behind-the-scenes, like...
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, I also feel like there's a realization that how many Hulk films have we had and every and how many times have... I have a hard... I feel like maybe that this one, maybe Ruffalo could, just because he's Mark Ruffalo and, you know... Yeah. But on the other hand, can Mark Ruffalo carry a film? Mark, I love you. Don't. but, like a, you know what though? Like, I feel like all that shit has to be thrown out the window. Anytime I've said, or anyone says, we'd be like, well, you know, they could never do a, you know, $150 million. There's no way. Fucking.
Yeah.
when you have Ant-Man, like, when Paul Rudd carried, it was a set, what, $60, $70 million, $80 million picture?
I think it was $120 or something, but, I mean, here's the thing. Like, if it's a Marvel movie, it's guaranteed to gross, like, $300, $400 million domestic.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter if you spend $120 million on an Ant-Man movie.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I will say that I didn't love Ruffalo's Banner this time out. Like, I kind of felt like...
It was a weird, like...
He was very stiff.
And a lot of that was, it felt like he was, you know, obviously a lot of, I don't know, it's not spoilers, but a lot of it is like, he's very confused and like what's going on, but like, I feel like it went on too long and like, it kind of kept going and then he just, I don't know.
There's, and this feels like a direction thing saying this. I love the way this movie was directed.
Yeah.
I thought that this was a really enjoyable movie. I thought that they made a lot of really good choices.
Mm-hmm.
But every performance in the movie was so far over the top.
Yeah.
And so it was like high, not quite high camp, but it was, they were pretty campy performances. Yeah. And when it's everybody, that feels like a conscious choice by the director.
Yeah, I mean, Valkyrie, like, she... That's her name, right?
Yeah.
She, by the way, is fantastic, and I'm so happy that... now, it's 22 minutes in, and I haven't made a single mention about there not being... By the way, there's a shit ton of... it's a multicultural planet, which is not something, or world, that you haven't seen before, which is shocking. I guess they're all the lower, like,
the
random folk who don't know how to wield swords or anything like that.
It's so
special,
weird, because I feel like I'd have to look again. I think Fandral dies in this, Zachary Levi's character. I think he's one of the guys who gets killed, like, immediately when Hela shows up and just starts killing folk in the Bifrost room.
I think everyone basically...
Well, yeah, but I didn't recognize a lot of those guys.
Yeah.
And obviously Lady Sif is not in this movie.
Yeah.
Because she's got Blind Spot going on or whatever it is. Or not Blind Spot. Blind Spot. She's in that TV show.
Yeah.
But,
So I guess we just have to... I'm curious because they're most of... Spoilers? Spoilers, maybe?
I'll say this.
If you want to get into it.
Here's my thing. Anything that happens in the first third of the movie and serves as, like, setup for the plot is really hard not to spoil while talking about it.
So, I mean, let's just say we lose, I mean, you know the premise of the film. You've got to kind of assume that there's a shit ton of people that die. Mm-hmm. But we lose a lot of Thor's crew.
Yeah.
Which is kind of, it's not that they've been around a lot, you know, like, whatever. But not only are they known characters, really well-known characters, at least, like, visually, in the Marvel entire universe, so that's surprising, because we don't lose characters within the Marvel universe. I mean,
And there's at least a couple of characters in this one where you're just, you get the distinct impression, like, there's no, like, oh, that person will be back in the next movie.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
No. And so, that... I mean,
down to, like, oh, they're... the yeah. body's not there when they go back to that scene
yeah,
again.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like, I mean, not and not in a way like, oh, he,
somebody, yeah,
you know. But it's surprising because not only because they're not really, I feel like the deaths were. There's no way that they would have lasted that long, but the yeah. scene was not like worthy of the character's death. Often,
yeah.
Because I mean, like the. You know, one or two of his kind of crew that you like know from yeah. the first film has yeah. quite a few lines, and you're like, oh, well, shit. That I feel like that scene should have lasted at least like 15
seconds.
It's funny
that this movie had such an eight, like they marketed it in such an 80s kind of thing, because mm-hmm. I almost felt like. Have you watched the Transformers the movie anytime in the last? There's a scene in Transformers the movie, like the big battle at the beginning,
yeah.
like where basically they were cleaning house so they could have a new run of toys.
Yeah,
and so there's a beat where like the bad guys get on this one ship and just fucking lay waste to all of the characters, and it's just like, oh yeah, these like beloved characters who've been on 30 hours of children's television, and they just like you get to see them like. Bang, bang, two shots, and all of a sudden yeah. it's like you see the lights go out in their eyes, smoke pours out of their mouth, yeah. and they collapse. And it's just like, that's kind of what it felt like. There's yeah. an element of like, okay, guys, we're bringing in the new crew.
The fact that he didn't get... And one of the problems with a character like her is the fact that she doesn't have her crew.
Yeah.
That, oh, at least the guy got two of the guy, you know, yeah, two of yeah. her crew or something like that first. It's like, yeah. no... Not,
she has, like, her army of the
for
undead.
80, and, but that yeah. doesn't happen until later.
Yeah.
Like, when she comes in and kind of cleans house,
yeah.
She doesn't have... She can't even take a ding.
Yeah.
Because not only she's god, whatever, but also she, like, there's not a scratch, there's not yeah. anything, and you're like, well, I would have liked literally kind of the second tier level
yeah.
god character, godlike characters to at least be able to put a scratch, which obviously establishes her yeah. as like, holy shit, you yeah. know, it's inevitable that everything's going to go, you know, fall apart.
I'm curious, actually, I just now thought of this. I'm curious as to whether we will see her again in the next couple of Avengers movies, because in the comics, yeah. Thanos is in love with death.
Yeah.
And that's, like, his whole motivate. Like, he wants to kill everybody to impress her. And I don't think you're going to see exactly that in the movies, because it's kind of a silly premise. That said, part of the reason it's such a silly premise is because Marvel's death is literally, like, a Grim Reaper. Like, it's just yeah. a female Grim Reaper, basically. It's like a skeleton in a robe. and that the visual of that and trying to seduce that wouldn't really play.
Yeah, no.
But I could see them bringing her back to be a foil for Thanos in some weird way.
I will say, what is the deal with these type of female characters? What, you know, no, that's DC. What the fuck am I thinking of? Suicide Squad, the way that they walk, like, yeah. so, like, Kate Blanchett and what's her name from?
Gosh, I can't remember the actress's actual name. Enchantress.
Enchantress. Whatever. It yeah. doesn't. We'll use what actress on one. Anything. But like the way that they walk, like hands, palms out,
yeah.
and then like just the like sexy way with the yeah. legs. But then for some reason, like when half. Probably some of it's CG, some yeah. of it whatever. It doesn't look, not only does it not look sexy, it looks just like weird.
Yeah.
Like, why are you walking with your thighs rubbing together? Like, funny. Why don't you walk like a human being?
If anything, it kind of reminds me of, there's a character, I think it's from Silent Hill, that everybody cosplays at Comic Cons, yeah. and it's this nurse.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I know what you're talking about, yeah.
And I kind of, that's the vibe I get from it. It's like I'm sexy and horrifying, and I move in a weird alien way.
But it's just like, no, she's got everything going. It's like, you know, yeah. Enchantress too. But I mean, obviously Enchantress was like 150 times over the top because yeah. she was doing that weird hip thing and dance for no apparent reason every yeah. time. Like, and it was like it basically worked out to be like an animated GIF you're watching, and you're like, wait, why is it just repeating? but like,
Cara Delevingne or Delevingne.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Who I really like and everything, yeah. and she, whatever, but that was, yeah, whoever told her to do that needs to be stopped. But it kind of had that same thing too, mm-hmm. where I don't know whether that was like and she had like a weird thing. Anyway, there's like some weird stuff, like the way that she's talking. I don't know if she's doing, because she was doing she was doing Blanchett like voice, like, right? I mean, it wasn't an accent.
No.
Yeah.
I think one thing that I find really interesting, and it kind of touches on some of the wonkiness of the CG and stuff, and this season I really, really enjoyed Legends of Tomorrow. Mm. And Legends of Tomorrow is one of the CW superhero shows, and it doesn't take itself seriously at all, and it goes so far over the top in a couple of cases. And I felt like there were times in this that it felt less like a Marvel movie and more like a really expensive episode of Legends of Tomorrow. And those were the moments when it pulled me out of the movie the most, because what you can do on a TV show that costs $1 million an episode and get away with, because like the audience is there with you in their living room, versus it like there's a weird tonal clash trying to do that in a $200 million movie. And again, this was a minor thing, but there were times when like it was so much fun and so zany and so wild. And then there were some times that the zany and the wild and the fun just like it would spike for a minute. And you'd be like, what am I watching?
One of the gladiators, like just his dialogue. Yeah.
That's the director, by the way.
That makes sense. Voice. Yeah. Who is funny. I mean, the problem is it tread dangerously close to kind of
undermining
I'm just thinking of some of the, it tread dangerously close, and I won't even say dangerously close. I'll say within the realm of Jar Jar. Within the realm of, there's a wonky character who every time you see him, he says something goofy.
Yeah.
And like, I've laughed really loudly out loud, involuntarily many times in this film. And many of the scenes were caused by that character.
His name's Korg, by the way.
Korg, yeah.
He's actually, that Korg is the bad guy who Thor fought before the Hulk in Planet Hulk. And also, I think, if not Korg, then a member of his race was like the villain in, I think, Thor's third appearance ever in the comics.
Yeah.
Which, if I'm remembering that right, and it really is the third, is an interesting, because of the third movie, but that's probably a mistake. But anyway, sorry.
I think a lot of that goes to like Marvel has more and more been recognizing the ridiculousness of everything, and again, that's very James Gunn.
Yeah.
But James Gunn did it in a like you're. It felt more like a you're with us in this joke, and like you're 100%, and like this. There's like, what was it? Maybe it's not spoilers. It's just giving too much information out. But as the line was, and you're like, yes, I saw that, and I don't necessarily like. I don't know. It was funny, but like when you start thinking, and it starts adding up and adding up, and you're like,
it's funny. Actually,
that's the 14th of those type of jokes. So you're like, this is ridiculous, like sort of things.
And it's funny because I didn't. For me, it wasn't Korg. It was Hulk. The whole bit where Hulk is a toddler.
Yep.
Like, he's just an angry toddler.
Yeah.
Whenever he's not in the gladiatorial arena, that's his persona.
Well, I mean, the problem is he talked a lot in this film, and,
and it was
there's
way
no
too much.
Way to get around what. There's the problem is that he has to be Hulk for X number of minutes in this film, and you're like, well, he literally couldn't just be going.
Yeah.
Like, you can't write one-sided dialogue, especially when your other dialogue partner is Thor, who are both like, which is like, I don't know if like the screenwriter must have been like, well, okay, so 80% of my film is made up of two characters who don't do dialogue.
My guess, honestly, is that this is building to, you know, again, because they've said this is the second part of a Thor trilogy, of a whole trilogy. My guess is that this is building to somehow curing Banner slash separating Hulk from Banner in some way. Maybe Mr. Fix-It, like the gray, intelligent Hulk who's like half as strong from the Peter David comics of the 90s. Or like, it wouldn't surprise me if we saw an evolution in the Hulk, especially because doing that evolution would give Mark Ruffalo a great way to say, look, I had this great character arc. This is a really interesting thing. Now I can move on with my life and somebody else can be Hulk.
Yeah. Well, he also...
Andreas Cho, who's the actual, like, the Korean teenager, I think, who is the Hulk right now in the comics. His mom appeared briefly in Age of Ultron. So, like, there's always that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he also... he has to, just as a character within the film, like, he has to be able to control Hulk considerably more, and you see that a little bit more in this film. Though, with one exception, do great comic effect.
Yeah,
which is
there's a weird this movie feels a little bit like a love letter to, like, it's like Y.E.T. has been sitting there on the outside watching and enjoying Marvel films for 10 years, and now this is his love letter to, like, there's literally, like, and again, this is not really a spoiler, it's just a thing that's, but there's, Hulk repeats the line, Hulk always angry, which was, like, his big badass line in the Avengers, and here it's just, like, Hulk is an annoying toddler, these are things that come out of his mouth.
Yeah. I think the problem is that you have to make him more of a, you know, monosyllable.
Yeah.
Than Thor,
yeah.
Because, you know, Thor is basically, you know...
I feel like Thor is a meathead, but he's not dumb.
But he doesn't, you know, I mean, you go through the entire time that he's had, I mean, like, what's his dialogue?
Yeah.
You know, and that's the essential thing, is that you're not making a... this couldn't be a film that was mostly quiet.
Yeah.
So you have to have witty banter back and forth. But when you're too witty banter, is literally and then on top of it, on, you know, Ruffalo's character, Ruffalo and Banner, he doesn't really have witty banter too much. Usually he's the either the butt of the joke, or he's the guy that says, you know, something, you know, smart.
And he's the exposition guy more than anything.
Yeah, I mean, like, you need... And it's almost like he, you know, because there's scene, he puts on some Tony Stark's clothing, and it's almost like he's, like, trying to do some, like, weird mix or something. Like, the Tony Stark, where it's like... Oh, God, I'm trying to remember which... Whether it was Iron Man or whatever, where he's, like, really, really fucked up after something happening to him, and it was almost like that. He was playing that character.
Yeah.
But
I feel like that was in the first Avengers when he got dropped out of the plane or whatever it was, and we had the Harry Dean Stanton cameo.
Possibly, yeah.
Like, he like, wakes up in the, like, middle of some field of rocks, but anyway, trying to think of what the things were that I really wanted to address, and again, like, I think we've done a pretty good job of being pretty non-spoilery, which makes it a shorter podcast, because usually we get to talk more about plot points, and we'll do that at some point once this movie's out on DVD or something.
Yeah. Or just on Monday or something.
Yeah. But trying to think, I mean, yeah, I agree with you. I think Tessa Thompson was great. She's a great addition. I hope that they do something interesting with her other than just, like, have her fight Thanos, and she'll be one of the 97 characters in the next Avengers movie. I'm super, super apprehensive of the next Avengers movie, because I just don't see anybody effectively balancing that giant crowd and giving anybody anything remotely resembling actual character moments.
I mean, I think it just has to go in waves or something like that. Yeah. Like, you have your teams or whatever.
Yeah.
The way that this film even jumped around, that's actually been my problem with the Avenger films in general, is that they so rarely fight. Like, you have that one, I'm sorry, I know so much of the public loved that, the airport scene. I thought that was the lamest fucking scene. Obviously, seeing the original, you know, seeing the comic version, seeing everything like that, but it's, like, the lamest fucking scene I've ever seen. It But anyway, I thought this everything, of course, was terrible. But you know how I think everybody listening to this probably knows how I feel about Civil War and Age of Ultron. I actually like Civil War more than I like Age of Ultron. But those you're just gonna have to have like different waves and different fighting sequences.
I mean, there's a way. There's a way to make it not a giant mess, but I don't know that there's a way to make it genuinely compelling. Like, I don't know. We'll see. I could totally be wrong.
I don't know if these Avengers... The thing is that, like, I don't know if these Avengers films have to. Like, when's the last... I mean, again, like, just just us, because we agree, basically, pretty much on the last couple Avengers films, where it's just like, I don't think that they seemingly have to. I think they'll be able to throw shit at the wall, and some of it'll stick. And everybody'll jerk themselves off silly about it, and then shit on Justice League.
Yeah, I think I think this is my favorite of the Avengers, actual Avengers movies, since like maybe Captain America. Yeah. I know you really liked Winter Soldier. I enjoyed it, but it wasn't one of my favorites.
Winter Soldier sold me for me because of politics and that sort of stuff, you know, so you don't have to, you know, once you inject that sort of stuff into the films, that, you know, I mean, like the fact that I liked the Guardians film so much speaks to, I think, like how just genuinely good they are, not how like fun and action-y and stuff like that that they are, but just like how well written and how well edited everything. Literally, there's not a single thing about those films that I'd be like, well, that could have been done better. Yeah, it could have been done different, but not done better.
And that's the thing, actually, is that I really enjoyed the hell out of Thor Ragnarok, but there are a couple of things that, like, I look at as a viewer and I'm just like, either we didn't need that, or it could have been done better, it could have been done differently. Yeah. I don't think it's a spoiler to reveal that there's a kind of extended sequence in this film that it's basically just a longer version of the post-credits stinger from Doctor Strange, where Thor goes to Doctor Strange for help finding Odin.
Yeah.
And I don't know, that whole thing just felt like, I felt like, and I like Cumberbatch, and I actually, like, it was fun enough.
Yeah.
Like, and they handled it pretty well, but it just, like,
it was the same bit done like seven times.
And it was like probably five minutes of movie.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, we could have spent a minute locating Odin in some other way.
Yeah.
And
I will say, I'm trying to kind of scan through my head on whether this is a spoiler world. I think that the film made me dislike Odin too much.
Yeah.
Like, between the, like, back history, between the kind of, like, him just, you know...
I think it's because this was, again, mirroring what they did in the first movie, I feel like this was them kind of trying to take it away from comic book Odin and turning it back into a little bit more of the, like, oh yeah, here's the Odin of Asgardian myth and how he interfaces with the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
I don't know... I don't know if that's what they were going for as much, because the whole scene in Norway, right?
Yeah.
Norway was just kind of weird. Like, not only was the dialogue neither kind of like, I'm going to speak in kind of Jedi riddles.
Yeah.
But I'm also not going to actually tell you like what you need to do and what's going on.
That did, I mean, I found certain things frustrating in the movie, and again, like, the movie overwhelmingly was really enjoyable, and so by and large I don't spend a lot of time on the things that bug me, but like that was one of those things. I felt like earlier I talked about how a lot of the performances kind of devolved into camp a little bit, and to varying extents it worked.
Yeah.
I thought that it really worked for Hela. Mm-hmm. I thought that it worked for Loki.
Yeah.
I didn't think it worked as well for Odin, because I thought that Anthony Hopkins is just an amazing naturalistic actor, and every time you see him start to go into camp outside of Silence of the Lambs, which is his own kind of iconic thing, but whenever I see him go into camp, I start thinking of, like, first of all, the Transformers movie. And then he did some other really awful,
Like, he's done a ton of small like films that when you actually accidentally watch them and you're like, oh, this is why I haven't heard of this film actually coming out. Because he's done a ton of films lately.
Yeah.
And I say lately, like and in the last like 10 years or so.
And he does this, the thing that he did in this one, the thing where I'm an old man and I'm smiling wistfully and speaking in riddles. This is a thing that he does a lot now.
Yeah,
and
it's kind of my checked out acting.
Like, yeah,
I can appear in a film, and maybe it's like, a little Marlon Brando esque. Yeah. Like I'm going to sit behind a table, and I'm going to talk to
you. It's his version of Harrison Ford's finger wagging.
Yeah.
So I was not overly impressed by not just like how they presented Odin, but also in the performance. Yeah. And I agree with you. I can't tell how much of that was an intentional like. We're doing a little bit of a character study or a riff on Odin versus how much of it is just like
I just don't think it was used well. Like the what happens, what happens like for all the characters involved. I don't know if it was used as appropriate as effectively emotional, especially emotionally.
Yeah,
like it was just kind of a and that happened.
And that was a thing that, like, for me, that was a product of their, I won't call it poor pacing, but there was a very frenetic, frantic pace to this movie. It was paced kind of similarly to The Foreigner, actually, in the sense that, like, it's like, you would spend a lot of time on a fight scene, but then there would just be a hard cut, and, like, you're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
And one of the things that Waititi did a lot of times, and I think it's maybe because he's not super comfortable doing fight scenes.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just a creative choice. I don't know. But there was at least four times in this movie where two people are about to, like, go at it.
Yeah.
And there's a hard cut to a totally different scene.
Yeah,
and you don't come back to the fight either for a long time or ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, there's a beat where, like, actually the big fight that you saw in every trailer 150 times between Thor and Hulk.
Yeah.
Like, there's a beat in there where it cuts away and, like, you just go to something else for, like, 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And then when it cuts back to them, they're in a totally different place and you're like, wait, what? And so...
I will say when, I completely agree, the extended fight sequences that we do have, though... Mm-hmm. Are pretty good.
Oh yeah.
If not, I mean, like a little bit frenetically, like the choices in editing go a little bit skew, but and just shot. I mean, because I think they're trying to do traditional fight sequences crossed with the immigrant song editing trailer like fight sequences, which worked. I think this
had some of the best fights of recent Marvel movies. And part of that is because, like, take Valkyrie, for instance. Yeah. Valkyrie is, like, this badass female warrior, and you could easily just be like, okay, she's Asgardian Black Widow.
Yeah.
And that's almost kind of backed up by the flirtatious thing she has going on with Hulk.
But the thing is, though, that is... I think that the reason why, especially... the main one that I think we're both thinking of, like, on the bridge, is that unlike the Avengers, where you have, like, just even the first Avengers film, you think about that downtown Manhattan, or midtown, actually, Manhattan fight sequence, you go from Iron Man, very effective fighter, can basically take on anybody. You have Captain America, basically can take on pretty much anybody around there. And then you have Black Widow, and then you have Hawkeye up in the thing, and he runs out of arrows or whatever. And so there's, like, you have the full range. And, oh, by the way, you have Hulk, who's literally taking on the entire spaceship alien things, whatever the hell they were. So in this film, though, especially in most of the main fight sequences, literally everybody is fucking, like, at minimum Iron Man level in that fight sequence, if not above.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
Valkyrie is close to on par with Thor, and even the bad guys aren't like the drones from the first Avengers. At least they can and even the random, like, citizens, by the way, take on quite a few of the zombie soldier things.
But my thing though is I also think that they did a lot less digital retouching on the fights in this movie than we've seen in a lot of the Marvel movies recently.
Yeah.
And you see a lot more things that are clearly like, oh, that's a stunt person, and not like, oh, that's a computer generated, you know. And you see that in I'm going to compare Tessa Thompson kind of favorably to Scarlett Johansson, and it's not really any fault of Scarlett Johansson's. It's just the selection, the choices they make with Black Widow, it feels like it's just a gymnastics performance. Yeah. And then they put people in places where they can strategically be struck by her foot.
Yeah.
Like, there's no semblance of an actual fight scene there. Yeah. It's just like, wow, look at this, like, sexy woman doing cool crap. Yeah. And all these dudes, like, walking into her foot.
Yeah, pretty
and
much.
Valkyrie...
And, and also, confusingly, people who, like... Captain America is punching in the face full force, having the same effect as her foot, like, as she flips backwards. And it's like, okay, anyway.
but Valkyrie had, like, she had a very similar fighting style, but I felt like everything she did, it was like watching Aikido or Jeet Kune Do instead of watching Taekwondo, because Taekwondo is, like, meant to be showy. It's meant to be theatrical. Whereas, like, Aikido and Jeet Kune Do are meant to be effective, efficient, and get you out of there.
Yeah.
And so there was an element of, you look at Valkyrie and you're like, oh, that's how the women in these movies ought to be fighting.
Yeah.
Because, like, and again, without getting into, like, a political thing, like, I do feel like there's a lot of fight scenes where... the purpose of Black Widow is to look super hot while also being at least semi-useful to the team.
Well, I mean, she also, like, doesn't have... I mean, she has no abilities, right? I mean, it's literally just she's really good at fighting. That's not a question.
Yeah.
But it's not like she can pick up shit, which Valkyrie, like, can pick up Thor.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that upon itself is a thing.
Yeah.
And so, like... You know, she has, you know, at least the...
Yeah, I like the fact that you have, like, with Valkyrie and Thor, you have this thing where, you know, the two of them appear to be roughly on par strength-wise.
Yeah.
And I think that he's stronger, but she's much more capable as a fighter.
Yeah.
And so, basically, you have two Thors floating around, and they're used slightly differently.
Yeah.
Which is kind of her role in the comics. She actually, if you look at Valkyrie's costume in the comics, it's literally just a distaff Thor costume. Like, it's got the blue, like, circles and the yellow belt, and she wears Thor's costume.
Yeah.
She's also, you know, Nordic Aryan girl. So, of course, casting Tessa Thompson in the role got some people all pissy. And to those people, I say, you're terrible people, because Tessa Thompson is, like, one of the best actresses in Hollywood. Like, you watch this and you watch Creed and you're like, yeah, I don't need to see anybody else in any roles for the next 6 months.
It she also can just do it. That we don't have to have all white characters.
Well, yeah.
Guys. Sorry.
I thought her performance and Hemsworth's performance were the two that I liked the best in terms of just, like, getting it across. And part of that, I think, is because both of them had the most kind of pathos, and they had the most naturalistic approach. Mm-hmm. And in a movie that is so over the top, these characters who are very naturalistic become then very relatable.
Yeah.
And it's this kind of weird, you know.
She also, I mean, the one thing I do, she reminded me a lot of Gal Gadot in... And not just female characters, but in the fact that they're having a shit ton of fun doing what they're doing, like, when they're fighting, and then they're kind of a different character to some level beforehand. I love almost everything about her character, though I wish that there was... I guess maybe it was supposed to be, obviously, it was, you know, like, she has, like, a switch that, I don't know, it just kind of happens.
Yeah.
And it's kind of... disappointing that there wasn't, I don't know, like, maybe there's just too many of those moments, because there's a lot of those, oh, is he or isn't he going to, and then it happens. There's literally, like,
I also
four at least.
it's also a weird. I think part of it is just a function of some weird creative choices because again, there are moments and it's like I talked about it in terms of the fights, but there are moments in the narrative where the director cuts away.
Yeah.
And then when you come back to that character has made a game-changing choice.
Yeah, off camera.
Off camera.
Yeah.
And so that it's because of the fact that almost all of those choices were obviously going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's not very jarring, and I think the intent was to try and get the Millennium Falcon moment. Like, yeah. That moment where Han Solo shows back up and you're
But, I completely agree, except there was too many of them.
Oh, yeah.
Because that whole film is building up to that moment. Yeah. Literally building, and you have very little signs. You know, obviously, we all know, but I mean, like, I would imagine, especially with Harrison Ford at the moment, I mean, it's like, not being a huge, you know, you could potentially see him he could pull a Lando or something. Yeah. But that there was, I can think of at least three moments with major characters within the film where they're all like, no, you're going to do it. And you kind of almost know that they are because of choices along the way.
Yeah.
Like they don't go too far. You know, the executioner not actually executing anybody.
Yeah.
Never actually really doing anything
bad.
Which
is kind of a spoiler, except for the fact that literally at no point, like, there's not a point in his character where Carl Urban isn't acting with every fiber of his being to say he doesn't want to be there.
Yeah. He just is literally trying to survive, and so he is, But, yeah.
But, that's the thing. Like, I really, really liked this movie.
Yep.
I don't think this movie is as perfect as... like, everybody adores it so far. It's got the highest Rotten Tomatoes rating of any Marvel movie ever. Blah, 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 blah. And I'm kind of like... I don't... Like, and I mean, I would say... And again, like, I'm hard on superhero movies most of the time.
Yep,
like, probably. I don't enjoy them as much as the average consumer does because of my relationship to superheroes and the fact that at the end of the day I still think they work best as comics. But on the scale of like recent superhero movies and certainly on the Marvel Studios movies, if I'm going to call a movie great, I'd say this is a great superhero movie. And you know, that said... I can certainly see some of the flaws and some of the edges. I'm going to be super interested to see it on a smaller screen and see whether taking away some of the spectacle of it.
Yeah.
I think it actually might enhance.
I would agree.
Because this was actually a fairly small, fairly personal story for most of these characters, and the spectacle almost distracts from what's going on.
The few like. Super wide shots of like spectacular shit happening were kind of disappointing. Especially that last scene.
And again, I kind of feel like some of that stuff where the fight scenes, like where people are rushing at each other and then it cuts.
Yeah.
I almost feel like that's the director admitting, like, I know that what you're going to come up with in your head is better than anything I can shoot. Yeah. So I'm going to move the story a little
bit. I think it just happened too much. Like, that was the only thing.
No,
I in a film that is small, it's like, you know, it's basically like, well, this is kind of a half of an Avengers film. And I kind of wanted a couple more minutes. If I'm going to spend 5 minutes anywhere, I'm like, I want five more minutes in the ring with Hulk and Thor, like just bashing each other. And
although I will say that to me, like when I look at it compared to the Hulkbuster fight in Avengers 2, which everybody just salivated over. Like, it was, like, the thing that they marketed the movie around. I thought this was so much better.
Yeah.
Like, just not even remotely close. This was so much better than the Hulkbuster fight. And part of that is that I was not super impressed by the Hulkbuster fight.
Yeah, I mean,
but I didn't think it was terrible. It was just kind of there.
I in general, don't like the... I'm happy that they've kind of, like, relatively, maybe they'll probably, I'm sure with the next one they'll change it. But I like the fact that they just went back to the one suit. Because yeah. I hate the bit of, I've got a suit for everything, yeah. and I don't actually need to be, and it was just too much. I'm like, I don't mind the gadgets and, yeah. and things like that, the enhancements, but I also, like, to me, yeah, end of the day, the superhero or the whatever is yeah. is the human or the person.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, but the one thing, not the one thing, I mean, it's like, how many times do we say the one thing? But I should rename the podcast, the one thing. But I really, really hope that this is the big move for the entire Marvel universe. Mm-hmm. Not only does it, I think, set up a, it gives through the next couple films, but it also gives a nice move towards what happens after.
Yeah.
After, you know, we...
Yeah, one thing that I'm concerned about is that, you know, we got an Iron Man trilogy and nothing else.
Yeah.
And if they're going to give us a Hulk or a Thor trilogy...
Yeah.
Then the ending of this movie, it would be satisfying if Hulk or if Thor wasn't going to show up again in 10 minutes in an Avengers film.
Yeah.
Knowing that Thor's story does not end here, and we can't give him the kind of okay, well, what's next is what's next. Yeah. You know what I mean? Knowing that his story is going to be defined, this ending is not particularly satisfying as the end, capital E end, of the story.
I mean, I think it works because the Thor Odin story, the storyline that they've been whatever kind of telling. In
yeah,
the
dynamic between and Odin and his two sons,
and even in the other films where yeah. he appears, and then and well, his home, you know,
yeah,
it's. It has its arc. I mean, yeah. obviously, we have to figure out what happens
next. Yeah.
Next? I can't say anything more.
Yeah.
It's, but I feel like that is complete. It's a very weird... Because obviously, Thor had become basically a tool in yeah. some way. And obviously, this film is very mm-hmm. much a passing the time. Mm-hmm. Maybe not passing the time, but like... We have to go pick him up, basically, like...
Yeah.
This basically is a traveling film to be yeah. like, oh, Thor has to go pick up
yeah.
Bannon and then come back so that the next films can kind of happen. Mm-hmm. Oh, and by the way, pick up some new people and, yeah. you know, whatever. So, but, like I said, I
want to see Bannon fight Thanos.
Just Bannon. Science! Just yell science at him.
No, that's Banner. I was saying.
Oh, Banner, not Bannon. Yeah, shit.
I want to see Steve Bannon just get obliterated by the Infinity yeah. Gauntlet. That's shit. A whole other thing.
Oh, that's the only fucking character I like. But but I would put it on a...
Steve Bannon, I was...
What? Oh, Steve
Bannon. It's Bruce Banner.
Yes. Oh, what the fuck was I thinking of? Oh, fucking hell. Anyway, sorry. But that would be hilarious. But sorry, now I just have that picturing in my head. But actually, for some reason, I'd rather just see Hulk go... or do it like he did with Loki, just
yeah. poof,
poof, on the stage at CPAC next year. Just drop in, be like, no. Puny god. But, like... It's, I mean, it's no Guardians of the Galaxy, mm-hmm. But within the world of the Marvel films, mm-hmm. I think it's certainly...
It's kind of the next best thing.
I mean, I got two Cap films, I got my two Guardians, I got my two Cap films, like mm-hmm. the first two Cap films, and then maybe this, then probably this.
Yeah, it's definitely my top five. I'll
because, but that. Honestly, like, I view... Guardians and like it's yeah. not part of the Avengers world
yeah.
so like there's the Avengers films. I mean, like, this is to me is more fun and better than the first Avengers film, mm-hmm. which is I think the best of yeah. that world. And then in the world at I have to rewatch the first Iron Man film. Obviously it is pained by, or it's kind of hurt a little bit by the fact that wasn't that long ago, but it was long enough you can't just have these ridiculous CG scenes. And obviously, I don't even know what the budget was, but, you know, it didn't have the world. It didn't have the universe. I won't say the used universe. I'll just see the... What do they call it? Certified... what do they call it? It's a used certified car.
Marvel
new certified or something. Like that. I'm thinking of a used car. Anyway.
So, I think anything else you want to say before we wrap up?
I don't think so. No.
All right. Yeah. I mean, Thor: The Dark World. Or I did it again. Thor: Ragnarok. Go see it. It's definitely worth your time. Yeah. You talked about how the director, you thought the director had said don't bother to see it in IMAX or in 3D because...
Oh, he just said 3D. Oh, okay. I'm pretty sure they said don't see it in 3D.
I wouldn't drop the extra money. Maybe there's a couple places, like during the big gladiator fight where it would be really cool in 3D.
Yeah, but if you really love 3D, then go see it in 3D.
Like, it wasn't shot in 3D, it was up converted. And to me, I tend to think anything that was upconverted, it's not worth paying the extra money.
Yeah.
But, so thanks for listening. Like, share, and subscribe this podcast. You should write a review. Tell us that we're horrible people because we don't like Civil War. We like those reviews.
Yep.
And then check back with us very soon because there's like a million other things we want to do